we're doing this day in, day out, and most people will only sell their home once or twice in a lifetime. And we get caught up in our acronyms in the industry in particular, and it's like we're speaking Japanese. So I think stop taking check of that and summarizing and just seeing what it's like through somebody else's eyes when they're not the same DNA as us.
You are listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent for real estate industry sales professionals, property managers, and leaders. Each episode, we bring you the best minds in business and real estate to help you list more, sell more, and elevate your results. To connect with all things Elite Agent, including the latest news, coaching, and features, subscribe at our website, eliteagent.com.
Welcome to another episode of the Elevate Podcast, where we delve into some of the most inspirational minds in business and in real estate for the very best tips and strategies for you to implement to elevate your business. I'm Samantha McLean, editor of Elite Agent and host of this week's show. People are a tricky topic in any business because when you have the right people, things just work. Customers get served well, the business becomes referable, and the ultimate outcome is growth. But just as easily, the opposite can happen. Recruit the wrong people and the cost of the business can be much greater than simply time and money and can amount to several times the person's salary. So my guest this week is someone that truly understands and is passionate about both of these topics, and that's General Manager of Dye Jones and Area's 2018 Most Influential Woman in the Industry, Kylie Walsh. Kylie has had a wealth of leadership experience with more than 20 years in the industry so far. She began her career in the eastern suburbs of Sydney, but then moved to the bush where at age 21, she bought her first real estate office in Tamworth, which eventually became a market leader in that area. Eventually heading back to the city, Kylie then embarked on a successful corporate real estate career where she honed her skills in operational management and human resources, culminating in her current role as General Manager at Dye Jones. This episode is part of our popular series, The Leadership Diary. So in this podcast, you're going to hear Kylie talk about what she believes is the future of real estate, along with the importance she's placing on recruiting the right people for a future-proofed business. She also talks frankly about how she finds the right people and why you need to make sure they are in the right roles with the right processes and systems to support them. And there's also some great stuff on how to measure customer experience, how to keep things simple, and what the trend towards automation and tech might mean for people, particularly in property management. So I hope you enjoy the episode, and if you do, please share it with your industry colleagues and of course hit that iTunes subscribe button. Two things with Kylie. One is she talks very fast and is exceptionally generous with her knowledge, so you might want to take a look at our notes from this podcast. For about a week, you can download an episode companion or action guide for this podcast at eliteagentelevate.com. Now, lots of you are already literally getting extra from us in the mail. And if you're not quite in the loop yet, you can literally get extra out of our podcast by getting the notes or action guides from each podcast delivered to your door every month in one convenient package. So if you'd rather take the complete shortcut, which we know some of you do, to getting all the golden nuggets from all of our podcast guests, go to eliteagentelevate.com. And once you've downloaded this week's notes, hit that big green button to sign up for extra, and we will send you all the notes in the mail, as well as giving you access to all the notes from previous podcast guests online. That's it from me for now. Enjoy the chat with Kylie, and we'll catch you all very soon. All right, so welcome to the podcast, Kylie Walsh.
Thank you.
Absolute pleasure to have you here. You've been in the industry for 20 years, I think I read somewhere, and you're now the general manager at Dye Jones Real Estate. And last year, you were named real estate's most influential woman at the Areas, which is a massive, massive accolade. But I want to go backwards a little bit before we go forwards, because we're going to talk leadership and all sorts of things today. But how did you originally get into the real estate industry for people that might not be so familiar with you?
I think like a lot of people in real estate by default.
Yeah.
I was hoping to study architecture, didn't get the marks with my TER, so came down to Sydney. I was originally from the country, went to business college, and the rest is history, as they say. Got a part-time job in Sydney, and then that developed into full-time and my passion and love and career.
Yeah. So did you start from the bottom and work your way up? So you started in administration or property management. How did you first begin?
Yes, I've done every role in the office. So I started with my first boss in Eastern Suburbs, which is funny because that's where I've ended back up.
Yeah.
So 18 on reception And then I've been right through and I've done every single role in the company. Yeah.
Yep. And then you moved back to the country?
I did.
Yep.
Born and bred in a little place called Boggabri on a property out of town, and started my career in Sydney, and then went home one weekend for a visit and thought mum and dad's stock and station agent was all right. And then that led me to stay and pursue a career in Tamworth. And I had an agency there for 10 years. And then I sold that, and that's how I headed into corporate.
What was it like owning a business or setting up a business at such a young age? Because I think I read somewhere you were only 21. And I remember at 21, I was too silly to do anything like that. So how did that feel going out on your own?
I probably didn't know any different at the time. I've always been incredibly driven and a big believer that you get out what you put in. Had great parents that always encouraged me to work hard and follow your dreams. So I had been in property management and had been in sales for, I think, 11 months or 12 months. And the agency that I was working for was a company-owned office, and it was in some pretty big financial trouble. And corporate came up to close it down. I thought, we'll have a crack here, and borrowed the money for stamp duty and a couple of signboards and things from mum and dad, paid it back to them in the first couple of months, and didn't know any better.
In that business for yourself, what do you think are some of the factors back then that helped you grow?
Hard work.
Yeah.
You know, there's no secret to success. There's no special tablet or medicine or process or gimmick or tech. It's just bloody hard work. And I think if you've got the passion and determination and you have the right energy levels and are authentic about what you do, then that gravitates a certain energy and people want to be around that and deliver an execution. I've been a big believer in that in my entire career. If you promise someone something, be it your team or a client, then do it. There's nothing worse, because that'll breed trust. Consistency and execution will breed trust. And I think that's been instrumental in my career.
Yeah, absolutely. So then you sold up that business and came back to Sydney. So tell me about that transition.
I sold that business. We were one of the top performing agencies in the country. And I actually went and lived in Brisbane for a while and looked after a network up there. And then a promotion came up for the same network looking after New South Wales and ACT. So I came down to Sydney and in that role of corporate as well.
We know the path to success is never normally smooth. Like, you know, it's never A to B. What are some of the challenges that you had to overcome to get to where you are today?
I think for me, it was really learning, and like a lot of people that are good sales agents, because naturally that's my DNA, is to breathe and realize that your greatest strengths are sometimes your greatest weaknesses. And mine is my sense of urgency and my patience level. So I rank off the Richter for those things. So I had to really learn to scale that down in both my business practices, but also sitting in lounge rooms as well, and really learning to adopt people's different personality profiling types. And I spent a lot of my professional career doing tertiary studies in that area to make sure that I absolutely nail that for winning business, recruitment and retention. And I think that's hugely important for anybody in the industry, because it is a people business. So for me, that was the biggest thing. And I still struggle with that. And my team are always saying, would you just slow down? But hey, it's not a dress rehearsal. I can't do it next time. So I try and fit as much in my day as I can, but having to recognize that not everyone operates at the same pace that I do.
That's really interesting, and a really good tip there is that, you know, like often we want to get the job done, but the person in front of you is not ready at all. So it's kind of like hold back and put yourself in their shoes and then see where that goes.
Yeah. And often I think too, with sales agents, a lot of sales agents go through often a lot of assistants or EAs. And my team sometimes say to me, Kylie, we're not telepathic. You've given us A and Z, but what about LMNOP? So little tips along my career around, well, repeat back to me, Sam, what you heard. What do you think it is that I said? And let's summarize the conversation. And I don't think enough of us do that with clients even. We're doing this day in, day out, and most people will only sell their home once or twice in a lifetime. And we get caught up in our acronyms in the industry in particular, and it's like we're speaking Japanese. So I think stop taking check of that and summarizing and just seeing what it's like through somebody else's eyes when they're not the same DNA as us.
Yeah, interesting. And that's an amazing piece of advice just right there. Dye Jones is one of those really admired brands in Sydney, certainly across New South Wales. Did you ever meet Dye?
I did. Di recruited me into the business. So I was on maternity leave with my second child when Di first started phoning me. And for any of you that know Di, she's the most tenacious, vibrant, amazing human being. And I think I said no 7 times before I actually had an interview with her and the other directors. I think I was breastfeeding actually during the interview. And Di was like, don't worry about that. Doesn't matter. But she was incredible. So I had the pleasure of having a lot of time with her, which I'm very, very grateful for.
Yeah, amazing. And what does your role as general manager at Di Jones entail now?
I'm not sure if I can say this, but fix shit quick. Look, I do a bit of everything. We're not BHP. So my job is to work alongside Rob Ward, our CEO, and make sure that I implement and execute on our strategic plans. But I'm still out there doing recruitment. I love doing recruitment because I'm so passionate about the brand and what we do. And I think we do an amazing job. Training, events, marketing, PR, you name it, I'm involved in it. And that's going to have to change with the growth of the business as well. And staying in my lanes, as the team often say, and playing to my strengths so we can get to where we need to be quicker and more efficiently. But ultimately, I'm responsible with Rob for the profit of the business, but mainly retaining our people and our culture. That's my core functionality.
So is anything out of all of that a particular focus for you right now? Like, what are you really passionate about right now? Because we're in a very interesting time in the real estate industry where, you know, there's lots of shiny objects out there. What is your key focus right now?
You gave me 3 hours. But look, I think because I work in all areas of the business, depending on the functionality within the business, so it's very different for our marketing team. It's about keeping it simple, testing a lot of the tech and marketing internally before we go to our agents, because there's not a noise around that at the moment. It's very distracting for the corporate team, let alone our people in the field that are just trying to make money with stock to market where it is. So it's one priority for marketing is keeping it simple. Analyzing from a cost analysis and what really is going to add benefit rather than it just being shiny and new. Mm-hmm. I love merge and acquisition. That's something I've done a lot of in my career. And I love going in, lifting up the hood and diving deep beyond the reports and really finding quickly if businesses are what they say they are and then putting strategies into place to turn those businesses around. That's probably my number one strength. And then also looking at efficiencies on P&Ls, but bringing out the greatness in some people. Some people are just in the wrong chair. And I've found throughout my career, if you really have a good conversation with your team, they might be more suited to another position. And we lose so many people in this industry because we have so many selling principles and they don't have the time to recognize that and nurture that. So that makes me excited as well. One lady in our team was in property management, coming to work every day crying, sitting down and having a look at what her strengths were, put her in a role now where she's running all of our coordinators and administration, and she's flourished and she's phenomenal and one of our key people. So that excites me because I'll be able to retain her. The churn in our industry is too costly to businesses and we lose too many good people to other industries because we don't recognize it.
Yeah, I think there's some sort of ridiculous cost of recruitment, like actually recruiting someone costs an exorbitant amount of money when you put in the time to not just place the ads, but also onboard them and stuff like that. So I can understand why you'd want to keep them. In that case that you just described, are there any sort of tools or anything that you use to identify whether people are in the right or wrong roles?
I think I'm incredibly lucky that I've had the franchisor experience that I've had. So we've got a toolkit that we've built that is very process driven. Yeah. Nothing is left to chance. So our onboarding, for example, actually goes for 6 months. So it's not the first week or couple of days and it's holding people's hand. And sometimes it's our fault they haven't been onboarded correctly. Usually we'll onboard somebody twice, but if it's more than twice, then it's usually a problem. And I always say that, you know, the first time to get rid of somebody is the first time you think it. Your gut's never usually wrong. But I think having the right team around Rob and I allows for us to make better decisions, and we still get it wrong. But I think having the right questions in an interview, a lot of agents or principals aren't trained in how to properly interview somebody. And they go in and they have a coffee with someone out of the office and they feel like they like them and they look good and off they go, rather than diving deep. And until I had the resources around me that I've got now, I would call on people in my sphere. And it wasn't necessarily industry people to come in and have a second look, and they would see things that I wouldn't until 26 years later. Here I am, and I think I run a pretty good interview. But get help with it. People are happy to help. And often now I don't get involved till second or third round, but always 2 interviews as a minimum, 3 if possible if it's a senior role that's important.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to come back and ask you a couple of recruitment questions in the Leadership Diaries in a moment. The other thing, I know you're quite interested in the whole customer experience piece, and it's a hot topic in real estate at the moment. So how are you thinking about customer experience as far as Dyer Jones is concerned at the moment? Like, what do you see agents out there are doing well and maybe not so well?
Again, it comes back, I think, to a lot of the noise and tech and rating and review platforms, and are they qualified, and is it a survey? Is it someone phoning? Is it someone going out and meeting people on site for settlement? I think it's what is right for your business is the first thing, and what is the strategic plan in the next 2 to 3 years, and what's your play? So is it around growing your sales team and market share footprint, retention of your agents and providing customer experience to them? Because we quite often as an industry just think about the public, whereas as you said before, is the cost of recruitment and some of the splits that are out there being paid. How about everyone have a focus on the customer experience to the actual team for a while and see what difference that makes to their profitability and their efficiencies? Or is it property management? So for us, and that's my caveat, for us, what is working, and we've made lots of mistakes over the last 6 years, but what's working for us is a really big focus on our agents internally and their customer experience and what we can do for them as a service centre, because I think that's the way the industry is heading. And a lot more focus on customer experience for both our tenants and landlords. So when we recently surveyed our property management portfolio, the amount of tenants that we had in our business that had properties in other areas that we currently service was frightening. Mm. And the net promoter score from those tenants as opposed to our landlords was even more frightening. So again, I think for each area of the business, it's a different strategy and a different focus. And of course, it's going to be different for every business depending on what the ultimate outcome is.
Yeah. And it's really tricky because you just let in there with, you know, agents have got ratings and reviews to worry about, whereas, you know, at the head office, you know, you're trying to also help by improving the customer experience. How can the two of those marry up, or how do you see them marrying up?
There's a number of things that we do, and it would take me probably half an hour to talk about what we do in that with our concierge. But the only thing that we really care about, both internally and externally, is how likely you would be as a customer to refer us to friends and family. So we regularly monitor that for our employees. And in fact, in the last 3 weeks, we've just done our net promoter score internally for our team, and very proud to say that that was at 90%, which is world
that's
class.
Really good. Yep.
And then the other one is our net promoter score for external clients. Clients that have used us and would they refer us to friends and family? And that fluctuates between 71 and 79%, has done for 2 years. So again, that's world class. But we don't always get it right. And I think that's more important, is I'm more interested in the complaints and what comes through and how I can turn that around and fix it, because we'll actually get more from that and more efficiencies and change things in our business if we listen to that feedback, take it on board, and then action it.
Yeah, well, it's funny you should say that, because I think a lot of agents, it's quite regular that someone might come past and leave you a bit of a steamer on some platform. But then if you look at that as a gift, in that if someone cares enough to actually leave you a review, then it's an opportunity to fix it.
Yeah, and I think that needs to be taken out of agents, be it property management or sales agents. Again, that falls into my remit. I'd rather take that off the agents and go and sit down and have a coffee. I mean, there's always the, you know, the rule, you always get the occasional nut job, technical term. But the majority of people just want to be treated fairly. They want to have a good experience. It's a massive outlay that a lot of these customers are paying. And I think, having just gone through the sale of my own home recently, we forget as agents how stressful that is. And I think that every property manager or agent should have to go through that process almost like a course every 5 years just to put themselves back in that seat.
Yeah, like secret shopping.
500%.
Yeah, absolutely. So you've had 20 years in the industry. What are some of the things that you've been most proud of in your career? What are some of the standout moments for you?
Probably number one is people that have come with me during my journey, as far as, you know, retention of people that work with me. So I've had a few people follow me from, you know, the last 3 or 4 companies. Second to that is clients that have followed me. I've still got a handful of clients, even from Tamworth, that won't buy things or do anything without engaging with me first, which is lovely. And some of those are, you know, 24 years ago. So they're two things I'm very proud of, and that probably comes from my loyal and authenticity and, you know, never lying, because it will catch up with you. You only get your reputation once, and once it's gone, it's gone. And then I think the other thing is probably in the last couple of years, I'm really proud of the wins we've had at Dye Jones. It was always a brilliant brand, but I'm really proud of the awards we've run, the growth, the systems, the process, and where we're heading.
Yeah, it's absolutely, you know, it's one of, well, we've actually delighted to have you on our Street MBA tour as one of the best agencies in Sydney. I mean, just a quick question about that. What are you hoping that some of the attendees will take away from that?
Again, I think depending on their functionality in the business that they're coming from, that hopefully there's something for everybody. But I think the process, the systems, and again, nothing's left to chance. This industry is not hard. We make it hard. And I think, you know, we repeat the same thing often. And if we're repeating it, then put a process, a form, a template or a structure around it, because then you're not scrambling to do it again.
Or a good checklist. I love a good checklist.
Yeah, 500%. Automation is key. Yeah. Automation is key.
So what about the future? What do you think are the big challenges the industry will face in the future?
Cost to operate is a big one. I think some of the splits that are out there being paid to agents at the moment is just not sustainable unless the model changes. I think there's massive challenges for values of rent rolls. Mm-hmm. I think that model's got to change. It's got to start to be looked at from a profitability point of view. And the average principal in Australasia is between 61 and 65. That's a problem within itself. And, you know, who are these people that are going to come in and buy some of these massive businesses out? We'll see a lot more mergers. And I think the industry will be a lot more around servicing. So whether it be a franchise or independent businesses, who can provide the best customer experience to their agents and who can provide the best services. So that's just looking at it internally from the industry point of view. And they will want more choice. So everyone's worried about the customer being the vendor or landlord and them wanting more choice and having higher needs. I think the industry needs to be a lot more worried about what sales agents and property managers will want moving forward.
Yeah, interesting. So you see the biggest challenges internally being the people.
500%, because there's a lot of automation and tech coming for property management, and that's going to be massive. And I think there'll be a lot of people moved into different roles from that. And that's going to be a lot of re-education for a lot of those people that may have been predominantly sitting in an office behind a keyboard and been very good at process. But if that process is going to be done now by robots and automation, then what are the other areas that we put them into, let alone the platforms that are out there that don't have trust accounting? So then what does that mean? And I think there's going to have to go back to some 101, how to talk effectively to clients and communicate face-to-face and press the flesh. So I think there's going to be a massive shake-up with training and coaching in the industry as well. But I think cost of sale is something that has to be looked at with different revenue streams. And that's been around for quite some time. But really, what have we done about it?
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk about, let's call it the back end. It's a terrible expression though, isn't it? About efficiencies there and agents cooperating in administration and things like that. Do you think that there will be more of that, more people have to work together so that on the front side of things where I'm talking to a customer that I'm supported by something that is much larger?
Yeah, and I think it'll depend on agents and their tech skills too. So if you've got someone that's been in the industry for, you know, and this is a generalization, by the way. I'm not saying everyone like this, but I'm going to use myself. If I went back into sales tomorrow, I'd always been in sales as a top performer with my own EA or admin, and that's how I was driven. And I don't think I've ever put a buyer in a database in my life. And if I went back into sales tomorrow, I would probably still scribble on a note and hand it to someone to data entry because I'd rather be out doing another three or four deals. And I think those agents potentially could struggle if they don't have scale and they don't have the right GCI, because maybe they're going to be with brands that expect them to do the data entry and the admin, and they'll have no interest, and it'll actually tie them down, as opposed to brands that can cater for different, again, personality profiles, and be able to have those service level agreements or SLAs with their agents to say, okay, well, you want the whole cream brulee, you want everything. Well, this is your split and this is the service we can provide you. You're happy to do your own pre-list and your own admin and whatever, great, we'll pay you a greater percentage, but here's your mobile device and off you go and plug in. So having that full service suite is going to be really, really important. And I think that whole what a sales agent looks like is going to change. So there's lots of companies now providing lead gen for their agents, providing the concierge, providing the readers of the world that are out there and all those sort of things. Well, that leaves the agent to negotiate.
Yeah. And you'd want to be good at that.
And like, you'd want to be good at it.
And you'd want to be good at that. Absolutely. So we're going to move on to the Leadership Diaries, which is a series of questions that we ask leaders such as yourself who have been in the industry and had some great experiences in the industry so that other aspiring leaders can learn from you. So are you ready? These are a bit rapid fire and I know you're unprepared for them, but here we go.
Sales entry.
Sales entry, let's go. Okay, so using your own experiences, how would you recommend that others prepare before getting into real estate?
Spend time with great people and cut energy vampires from your life.
Good advice. What are your three favorite tools at the moment for running projects or running the business more effectively?
Teams in 365. Video messaging, so get away from emails and text messaging. And with meetings, I'm delivering a lot of my messages just simply by recording it on the phone to the team, keeping it short and sharp. And my third favorite tool at the moment is working with a harmonized team that aren't working in silos, and that's people.
Yeah, that's interesting. Number two, actually, I've been doing that lately too. I've found this tool called Loom on Chrome. And I'm answering a lot of email inquiries and things like that just by making a quick video. And I tell you what, such a time saver.
Yeah, Calendly is great. Like you're using for your calendar. We're using that in the network now.
Yeah.
And it just makes it efficient.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so what does the first hour of your day look like and how does it go after that? Are you like a 5 a.m. clubber or?
No, not a 5 a.m. clubber. I don't sleep very well. So like 1 a.m. in the morning is about my time that I pull up stumps, but I still, you know, two little kids, so I get up early. But every day, my day is hygiene. So the first hour and a half is just making sure that I'm doing email catch up, phone calls and getting my day right and following and executing up. So I've still got the credibility from my team and coming back to that technical term, getting shit done.
That's like the hour of power, isn't it? Yeah. Can you name someone or something that has had a tremendous impact on you as a leader?
My parents, fundamentally. And look, I'm incredibly lucky. Everyone that knows me, I don't fluff. It is what it is. And I have a very close circle of the people that are near and dear to me, I could count on seven fingers. And they're smart people. They're good business operators, but they're good humans. There's no agenda with it. They're authentic. They hold a lot of the values dear to their heart that I, and that's important. And the older and crankier I get, the more important that is. Have better conversations and cut to the chase quicker, both in life lessons, but also in professional, and happy to share and collaborate. So if anyone's looking to get into real estate, surround yourself with great people, ask the question, get off your backside, go and find great people because great people will always give you their time if they can see that you're energetic, passionate about it, and go back to them and let them know what you've learned from them and thank them for it and they'll give you the time again.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm amazed actually not being originally from the real estate industry that there are so many people like yourself that are so giving with their knowledge and their expertise and all of that sort of thing. It is amazing.
I would get a phone call every week from someone saying, can I come and spend some time with you? Can we come and do an office tour? And I'm happy to do that. But the caveat on that is, what's the agenda? What do you want to get out of it? When are you going to implement it? And how do you think we can help each other? So, you know, I'm always happy to share and collaborate. And from having people come into the office and spending time with me and our people, I'll get just as much out of that because you can tell from that conversation, you know, whether they're smart. And I love new entrants in because quite often they'll demonstrate things that I used to and I'll think, oh God, I used to be like that or I used to do that. Why have you stopped doing that? And bring it back and bring that energy back. Even if you're having a bad day, someone that's in their early 20s that's got great energy and excited about it, I think, yep, they've got it right.
Yeah, absolutely. I reckon there's a lot that we can learn from some of the younger people that come in. Who are you learning from right now? Are there any books or tools that you'd recommend to other agents or business people out there today?
Look, I've always got about three or four books on my sideboard that never get finished because I get bored with them before I get finished generally and I flip from chapter to chapter. So I've probably got a very long list. Podcasts are big. So every morning when I go walking, I'll listen to, it could be industry or it might be just crime to turn my brain off.
Yep.
Because I do think this industry does suck the life out of you and you need to be very careful about rejuvenating yourself and looking after yourself because if you don't look after self, then you're actually no good to anybody and you can't turn up and be game on. So it doesn't matter what tools you have in your belt, if your clients don't feel the energy and they don't think that you're really wanting to work with them and the best fit, forget it. Walk away. Energy and passion will be 80% of the business every time.
Okay, so we're back to the recruitment question now. What is your favorite question to ask someone in a job interview and what does their answer tell you about them?
I think just breaking that right down to before the question, if it's okay, is a walk around the block sometimes is great. I don't necessarily know if a coffee shop's right for the first meeting. I do a lot of coffee shop meetings or early in the morning meetings, and depending on whether or not they're customer facing. So if any of the corporate team are going to be customer facing, which is, remember, our people internally as well, then I will go and see what their etiquette's like. I'm a bit old fashioned like that. The shoes clean, what's the clothing look like, etc. But I think you can't go past the question about, tell me a little bit about yourself, your family, and keep it completely out of work. You know, the old one, did they play team sports? Are they a team player? What motivates them? And then drilling down further from that, you know, in team sport, how did that make you feel? Did you ever hold any leadership roles? If that's relevant to their role, were you a team captain? How did you inspire your team? If it's a management role, if it's an EA or an admin, is doing a little bit of a personality profile test with them without them knowing they're doing a personality profile test. So listening to how they might respond to something. So when I was in sales and I'm a high D, in the DISC profiling, I would say to an EA, so how was your weekend? Tell me about that. And if their first 10 minutes was what restaurant they went to, what the food looked like, who was there, what they said, what did they wear, who they saw when they were there, and it takes 10 minutes, I'd be like, my God, shoot me now. And that's not their fault, yeah. But I just recognize that my personality type probably couldn't work with someone that took me 10 minutes to tell me how their weekend was. So I think that's important for that. But how they deal with situations is really important, and just keep asking questions. No different to a listing presentation when you're training a sales agent. Those who ask more questions win.
Yeah.
And then follow up afterwards. So could you have a look at this for me on the website and let me know what you think? Who follows up? The old-fashioned one, you know, thank you for the interview today, and this is what I got out of it. And I always go away and say, listen, after today's interview, just come back to me with the top three things that you think are amazing about the company and you're excited about. And what are the three things you'll probably think you're going to have a challenge with what I've told you today about the role or the company, or three things that I may not know about you that you would like to be transparent with, that could pop up later and cause us both problems. You have my trust on that. And it's amazing what they will tell you.
What you're describing there is almost like an audition, because follow-up is so important in real estate. So if they don't follow you up, what is it going to be like following a customer up?
Yeah. So I also, and look, everyone doesn't have this luxury, but I never read a CV before an interview.
Me neither, actually.
So obviously, I've got a HR manager, her job's to kind of, you know, weed out, but I don't want to have any preconceived ideas. And it's hard because being in the industry for 26 years, I know a lot of people. And if they've worked for an office, I don't want to get any preconceived ideas, or if I've heard of them, that's not fair to the candidate. And I might miss some really good talent because I've let that get in the way.
It's interesting too. Like, I think these days anyone can say anything that they like on a CV. And so that's why I don't ask for CVs in job interviews anymore, because they could send you anything.
And check references.
Yeah.
Even if you're using a recruiter, and I think there's a place for recruiters in our industry, but check their references. I'm amazed with that, but I'm amazed the amount of people that put people on and I go, why didn't you ring me? If you knew that they used to work for me, why didn't you ring me? I didn't have time. And there's so much reactive recruiting that goes on in our industry. Anyone that has a business or is a sales agent that works with a team should always be recruiting and be able to pull that top drawer open at any time and pull someone out. And if you're not attracting people like that, you're not recruiting properly.
Yeah, interesting. So in terms of recruiting, when you say it's almost like always be recruiting, so you need to be recruiting ahead of the resources that you need.
Yeah, and that's something I love to do, and Rob's the same in our business. We're not very good at staying in the here and now, always kind of thinking, you know, Rob's always 5 years in front, whereas I might be a year. But it's about thinking, well, what does my business need? And if you're meeting somebody, is always asking the question, again, like a sales agent in the field, do you know of anyone that's thinking of selling? Oh, you know everyone thinking of moving, or are you happy? But the amount of great customer experience people I've got, and I've got a girl at Warunga who was working for my pharmacist in Willoughby, and her customer experience was phenomenal. And I said to her, if you're ever looking to move, let me know. And she's been with us for 4 years now and she's first class.
Yeah, wow, amazing. So it's not necessarily the real estate skills either. It's actually sort of looking at the role and then who might fit that role, whether they've had real estate experience or not.
Absolutely. And again, it comes back to process, procedure, templates, checklists, and that automation. Give me someone that's got the right attitude and is happy to come to work every day, and we'll teach the rest.
Absolutely. What's one personal characteristic you think every leader needs to have today to lead effectively?
Be authentic and present.
So just be yourself.
Yep. The amount of people I see sitting in meetings and, you know, they've got their phone on, you've got one of your team members sitting in front of you and you're trying to show them that they're valued, but you're on your phone.
Yeah. It's not a good example.
It is not a good example. And authenticity. People buy into authenticity and you'll have their loyalty for a lot longer if you're authentic than feeding them bullshit.
What's the best way or what do you do at Dye Jones to help a new employee understand the culture of the business?
So we have a staff rewards program and video that helps with that. But the biggest way for us to show what our culture is to take someone through the office during an interview process. You pick up on the energy. We're trying to make all of our social media now. It used to be really, really stiff and rigid. And people would come in for an interview and go, oh my God, you're human. You're so much different to what was portrayed. So we're trying to do a lot more video in that respect now rather than a lot more property. It's all about our experiences. So I think our staff rewards program has been great for that, demonstrating to people our net promoter score, what our team is saying, just walking them through the office. You can't fake that.
Yeah.
You can't fake your people. And if you do, you'll get caught out. But I'm a big believer in like ring any of my people again, going listing presentation, ring anybody on our website, anyone in our team and ask them what it's like to work there. They're all pretty honest. You know, they'll give you the good, the bad and the ugly. And just like you do when you're closing a deal in the field, we will quite often say to people, look, Sam, here's three or four people that have joined us in the last 12 months, all very different. We'll all give you different feedback, but ring any of them.
There's nothing like a good bit of social proof to actually let people know what it is you're about.
Yeah. And past exit interviews. So we give everyone a really good exit interview when they go. And 9 out of 10 of our people when they go say that they'd come back. And most of the time they're getting transferred or other reasons that we can't control. And I'll quite often pull an exit interview out when recruiting and say, listen, these are the last 5 people that left in the last 12 months. This is what they've said on the exit.
What advice would you give to someone going into a leadership position for the first time? So I'm brand new and I'm taking the step up.
Sit back and watch for the first 2 months and don't really do anything different. Don't talk more than the people around you. Just listen, observe. If you're having meetings with people, depending on how many people are reporting to you, make sure you record it. So next time you meet with them, it's not a new agenda and you're actually opening up and letting them know there's nowhere to hide. And this is what we spoke about last time. This is what I've actioned to show that you have done it. And this is what you committed to. Have you done it? And why haven't you? Always checking in and asking your team how they are. I've found historically that if someone's off, it's never usually work. It's always what's going on. And if your home fires are burning, then everything else is okay. But again, spend time with great people. You know, go and find somebody that you get on with from a conference or somebody in, you know, it can be another capital city, and just say to them, what are the top 3 tips that you've got? But I think being accessible. So the biggest way I've seen for people to lose people and not have good leadership is to have their door shut, not be accessible to their people. So I try and make sure now Wednesdays for me, I don't put any appointments in and I'm just there for our people. But execution is my number one.
Can you explain a little bit more about that?
Yeah, look, if you say you're going to phone one of your team members back, phone them back. My team know that I'm impossible to get a hold of between 10 and 6, but I will always ring someone back that day. And if I'm on the phone, it's 8:45 and I get to my list and I think they've got kids, is it inappropriate to phone? I'll text and say, you know, it's 8:45. I'm available if you want to have a chat, but out of respect to you and your family, I didn't want to give you a call. But I'll always get back to them. And I think, you know, you have a performance review with somebody and there's action items out of it, action them.
Mm. If someone is going through a bit of a bad time at home and it is impacting their work, how do you deal with that?
I think it's hard. I mean, you want to be there for your people and that's important. But I think also, you know, is it at what cost? So I always look at it and think, if that person's prepared to give back to the business and they've been loyal and flexible, then we should return the same. But if they're taking the piss, then the decisions have got to be made. We have a counselling service for all of our guys, so we don't know who uses it. We just pay the bill, and that's been fantastic, and their family can use that as well, and that's been amazing. But it all comes back to relationships and trust, and there's some things you can't help with. But I think it's really hard as a business because you want to care, you want to nurture, and you can do that for a certain period of time. But at the end of the day, it is all about loyalty and supporting those that are loyal to you and them showing good leadership. So I believe there's as much as a responsibility to your team to show good leadership as there are for the people that have got the title. It's everyone's responsibility.
What does leadership look like at home for you?
I'm exhausted by the time I get home, Sam, so whatever. My husband and I are both very, very strong personalities, so that's interesting. We both, you know, have very busy jobs, but leadership for us at home is providing a really great environment for our girls so they grow up to be good humans and making sure that we're not our children's friends. And I know that sounds terrible, but I'm pretty old-fashioned and the way I was brought up was a bit of tough love. And I think we're probably a little bit too flexible in that situation with kids a lot these days. A lot of cotton wool and social media is a big problem. But leadership at home is just the same as it is at work, being a good human.
Yeah. So you've given us a lot to think about in terms of leadership and innovation and customer service today. And I mean, it's amazing your knowledge of the industry. If there was one thing that you want everyone to remember as a result of listening to this interview today, what would it be?
Be true to yourself. You don't get a second crack at this, so do it right the first time so there's no regrets.
Kylie Walsh, thank you very much.
To connect with all things Elite Agent, including the latest news, coaching and features, subscribe at our website, eliteagent.com.